Today's talk is on a topic that isn't discussed too often here, but is important, I think, and that's sort of why I decided to do a little talk on it. It's a teaching which is called the Four Reliances in English.
欢迎大家, 非常高兴看到大家来今天, 在这里共同的研讨, 佛法。 今天的题目是四一子，这个题目呢，我听到讲这个题目的并不多，因为是这样子，所以我选了这个题目。Okay,
now this group of teachings are designed to help students interpret the Buddhist sutras and shastras and other Buddhist writings, and also to help them understand Dharma talks and things along the, any kind of method that's being used to try to convey the Dharma. Now, why do we need something like this? Well, we need it because if you've done a fair amount of reading in Buddhist literature, you've probably had the experience of reading two different things that seem almost to contradict each other. You can't quite understand how they're both talking about the same thing. It can be confusing in that way.
为什么我讲这个题目呢? 因为我个人感觉这个题目能够帮助我们 当我们在学习佛法的时候 不管是读经 不管是在学禅修 或者是听佛法的时候 都很有帮助 因为有的时候我们在看 研读佛法的时候 我们看 看的时候好像有不同的 来源同样的东西会有不同的说法，所以有的时候会感觉到很混淆。那今天这个题目，四一子能够了解了以后，能够帮助我们，对于当我们在研读佛法，或是听经，或是禅修，或者是各种修行的时候呢，对我们有非常好的帮助。
Now, the method that they use to help us in this way is that they tell us what to rely on and what not to rely on when we are trying to understand what a Dharma talk or some writing about the Dharma is trying to say.
所以今天这个题目四一子呢会帮助我们在当我们在听 佛法听演讲的时候呢，我们可以有一种内心有一种很踏实的了解，就是说什么能够依止什么，什么是不能依止的。All
right, now there are lots of different versions of this teaching in the literature, and you know that sometimes the four are in different orders. And sometimes, obviously, there are different translations all over the place. But this one is pretty good, I think, and this is one that I'll be talking about today.
当我在准备这个话题的时候，我参考了不同的这个书，还有读了不同的资料。他们有那个这四种四一子呢，它的次序有些不同。可是我今天所根据的是这个次序，就是写在白板上面的这个次序。
Okay, so let's get started. Now, what's the first one? The first one says, rely on the Dharma, not on the person. Now, remember the Dharma, this Sanskrit word, in this context, it means the teachings, the Buddhist teachings, those truths that Shakyamuni discovered when he attained liberation, and that he then taught for 40 years in India to an ever-growing following of people, and he did this approximately 2,500 years ago, and it's still true today. Okay.
第一个依止是依法不依人。 这里的法呢，说的是释迦牟尼佛所说的法。那释迦牟尼佛在 2500 佛法，他所传给我们的这些佛法的道理和方法。所以就是我们要依止这个佛所说的法，而不依人。那今天2500多年以后呢，我们还是照样的受用当时释迦牟尼佛证道以后，在说法40年这里面的这些教义，我们还是非常的受用。
Now this reliance is in a way one of the most important to get straight. It's got more than one application. It means a few different things.
这第一项的依止依法不依人是非常非常的重要的，它可以延出很多不同的这个受用的方式。
Okay, now the first is it's reminding us of one of the most important aspects of the Buddha's life and teachings, which is that the Buddha, Buddhism is not merely a belief system. It's not merely just a set of rules that you're supposed to memorize verbally. It is a practice. It is something that you have to try to actually incorporate into your own life in order to get the benefit of. Okay, if you just memorize a few statements and then never changes your behavior in any way, and you never even think about the statements to try to understand what they're really driving at, well, you're not going to make much progress. I mean, that's a very shallow approach, and you won't get very, very profound results.
第一个呢，这个依法，这个法呢，佛法里面所说的这个法，并不是这种宗教的一种所谓的教条，就是死死板板的你记着，然后就死死板板的照着这样子，就是去好像是背条文一样的背下来。这个佛法里面的这个教义呢，是要你去修行的，是要你去练习的去做，然后做了以后，深深的从内心身心上得到受益，所以说是跟一般的这个宗教的信仰的里面的教条是不一样的。
Now, part of what, you know, practicing Buddhism involves is thinking about the teachings and trying to decide, is this true? Is this a real, you've got to be active about it. An active reader is what's required, an active practitioner. You have to ask yourself, okay, well, the Dharma says this, is that really true? Think about it. Does it apply in your life? Does it not apply in your life? What do you think?You have to try to make it personal in that sense, in terms of coming to some understanding, deeper understanding of what it's about. Now, basically, this is reminding us, this first reliance, the Buddha did not want his disciples to accept his teachings simply because he was a famous master who had a good reputation. Now, by the end of his life, the Buddha was very famous, and everybody, you know, talked about how profound he was and all of that. But that's not why the Buddha would say, that's not why you should believe my teachings.
也就是说，当我们听闻佛法的时候呢，我们不能就是死死板板的就硬硬的把它背下来，然后一点都不经过自己的思考去想，说我听到的这个道理对我这个人，对我这个本人能够怎么样去用，怎么样去让我听完佛法以后照着去做，以后去练习，然后去想为什么佛这样说，然后为什么它里面的深意到底是什么，有这种思维文思修的这整个这个过程很深入的去照着这样子的去操作练习，然后有一种发自内心的一种体验，说这个真的很有道理，或者说这个方法其实不适合我，是不是有其他的方法。也就是说，当我们听闻一个佛法的时候，不像一个宗教的道理，就说不做这么做你就会怎么样，那你就要照着去把它里面的这个活起来，把这个佛所说的法呢，让你自己本人参与进去，活活的活起来，让你能够真的从这个 佛所说的教义里面得到个人的受用而得到领悟。所以说因为是这样子第一个依止所谓的依法不依人呢，就是说即使你就是要根据这个佛所说的道理活活的把它运用上，而不是因为因为一个很有名的法师或者是佛本人说的我就要照着，因为佛是那么有名的，那这么开大智慧的人，所以我一句都不思考，我就是硬绷绷的就把他说的东西就拿过来，这不是这样。也就是说我们不去因为佛这么有，那当时他是非常有名的一位出家众，一位这个已经是得道见性的人，佛不希望就是说因为看到佛依止他这个人，而不是依止他所说的道理而去照着这样做。所以第一个依止是非常的重要的，也就是说就把他拿到现在这个当时这个现在我们这个社会，许多的人呢听闻佛法的时候，或者去追从哪一位某某有名的法师，而不就是因为是这个法师很有名就是朝着这个法师去信仰他，而不去信仰就是佛所说的道理。
All right. Now, how do we do this as modern people? How do we do this? Well, it's not really that hard because a lot of the teachings are Buddhist teachings are basically telling you what to do. The Noble Eightfold Path.For example, that's a sort of roadmap. Do this. Have right thinking. Have right action. Have right livelihood. Have right this. Right. Yeah. Now, of course, you have to understand what all those things really are. You have to, you know, study to make sure you know what all those things really are. But you can then, once you do that, you can start to practice. Put it into practice in your own life.
那我们如何照着佛所说的法去做呢？其实有很多佛也提出很多修行的方法，比如说八正道里面有各种有八个所谓的正道去依循照着做，而让自己有深入的体会，而得到真正的受益。
Now, just in my own experience, one of the things that I started doingearly on, when I was first really, really trying to get more serious about Buddhism, was to focus on mindfulness. I think this is something that modern people can get a lot of benefit from. I know that many modern, you know, modern people in our, you know, the urban existence that we have here,They understand this idea of mindfulness and know that they would probably be better off if they had better ability to remain mindful. Now, mindfulness is basically just keeping your attention on what is going on right now, right here. It's basically present moment practice is one way to think of it. Staying in the present moment.Not letting your mind go flying around, worrying about other things that don't have anything to do with what's going on right in front of your nose, okay? Buddhism says you should try not to do that so much. Try to train yourself, and you can train yourself. That's the point. You can train yourself over time. You'll be able to keep your mind in the present moment better. You will be able to get better at this if you start to practice.
那我个人呢举个例子，我个人练习的方法就是如何活在当下，对于任何时间我都把我的注意力放在当下这个时刻该怎么做，该怎么注意，该怎么思考，怎么思维，就是所谓的活在当下。这个是可以练习的随时随刻当发现自己又在思考过去未来的时候呢，注意力放在这个过去或是未来的时候，马上停下来，然后马上就带到把自己的注意力 带到当下这个时刻该怎么做。所以我常常这是我的一种我的方法，我深信大家都可以用的，而且是可以练习达到，就是随时随刻活在当下。
When you're on retreat, you'll be taught how to eat your meals in a certain way, in a mindful way. What it basically entails is keeping your concentration on what you're doing when you're eating. You might take a forkful or a chopsticks full of food. You just gobble it down as fast as you can while you're thinking about something else, like some problem you have at home. You know, oh gosh, I got to get my taxes done. Oh man, how am I going to do that? Oh, I want, you know, rah, rah, rah. You know, that kind. That's how we exist most of the time. A lot of us, right? Well, on a retreat, on a mindfulness retreat, you try not to do that. You very slowly you take the piece of food. You might smell it. What is the smell of this food? You're trying to get a very, and you're staying right with it. Oh, look at, yeah, I can smell that. Okay, after you smell it, you put it in your mouth. You feel the taste. You experience the taste. Then you chew, and you chew. And usually they want you to chew more than people do chew in the real world. People are gulping their food down most of the time. Very simple thing. Pay attention to what you're doing. Pay attention to what you're actually doing.
举个例子，当我们在禅修的时候呢，法师常常会教我们在吃饭的时候要非常的专心的吃饭。那专心的吃饭的意思就是说，我们对每一个举动我们都很注意。比如说你拿菜，或者是你快要把饭放入自己的嘴巴里面之前呢，很清楚的这个动作都非常的清楚，先把这个饭菜拿在这个鼻子这边闻一闻，它的道理它味道是什么，然后再放在嘴巴里慢慢的嚼。常常法师会教我们吃饭要细嚼慢咽，所以要嚼很多很多的吃，让这个慢慢的，就是整个这个微细的举动都非常非常的很清楚，而且很专一。这就是在练习活在当下的一个方法。
So this little practice can give you an actual experience in your own being, an experience of what it means to be mindful and what it means to be unmindful. And you will be able then, you'll feel it in yourself. You don't have to rely on anybody, any person's words. You've done it. You feel it. You see it. Okay?
所以这个整个这个练习，这个如何专心在每一个细微的动作下，如何活在当下，这个我们自己是可以练习，而且可以深深的体会到它当你不这么做的时候是什么样子，当你这么做照着这样子做的时候是什么样一个结果，你当下就可以很清楚的知道。这不需要依靠什么有名的法师或者是他的因为他有名，或是因为靠他的名气来达到这个目标，你自己就可以照着这样子这个方法去做，就可以当下得到受益。
All right, now I think that mindfulness practice, you can feel that pretty fast. I think most people can get a sense of what that's about pretty quickly. And it can help convince them that the Buddha was onto something. Another thing you can all do, I don't think it necessarily has as, you don't see it working as quickly, but it does work, and it's something you should do, is very simple. Follow the precepts. Follow the precepts, folks, okay? You all know that, you know, in Buddhism we have some precepts, which are recommendations as to how you should live your life. And not exactly absolute laws or rules or something like that, but they're recommendations. Your life will be better if you don't become a murderer, okay? You know, simple example, right? Your life will become better if you don't become a thief. You know, no killing, no stealing, right? Don't become a liar or somebody who defrauds other people. Your life will be better if you don't do that, okay? That's what the Buddha is saying. And now, of course, you won't necessarily feel that betterness right away. But I think that if you have some bad habits and you know that they're bad habits and you know that they sort of break the precepts, if you can bring yourself to say, okay, I'm going to try to not do that anymore and just stop doing it, over time, it might take a year or so, but I bet you eventually, if you look back on it, you'll say, you know, that was a good decision. My life, I think, is better now than it was before I did that.
第二个我们可以做的就是照着佛教里面所立出来的这些戒律去照着这样做，让我们的生活，我们身心就比较安定，比较比较有秩序。比如说如果一个就是去杀了人的人，他犯了这样子杀戒的这样子的一个戒律的人，他的生活是不会平安，也不会很和祥，很祥和的。所以说佛教的戒律呢，不杀不偷，这整个五项呢，表面看起来你可能不会感觉到马上就能够受益，像我们刚刚讲的那个方法就是如何专注吃饭，马上当下可以受益的。可是长时间下，如果你照着佛教的这个戒条去生活，你会发现你的生活是比较有秩序，而比较有平安比较能够安定你的生活，安定你的身心。
Okay, so that's what we mean by, you know, a practice, not just a system of rules that you've memorized. You've got to actually try to live it. You've got to actually try to put it into your life. I think you get the idea. Not always that easy. Don't hate yourself when you fail. You know, you probably will fail. Just put it down and start over. You know, don't hate yourself, you know.
还有就是说，当我们在练习修行的时候呢，我们如果发现自己失败，自己定义失败的时候呢，不要就是有一种对自己好像批评自己，好像厌恶自己的这种念头起来。如果当时一下子做不到的时候，再继续练习，就是继续练习总有一天你会做到的。
Okay, now, so all of that is an example of relying on the Dharma. You understand what the teachings are, you try to put them into practice. If it works, great. If it doesn't, well, then you have to think about it. But you're not doing this just because some person has told you to do it, and you have some kind of relationship with that person. That's not it. Now, this is good. This is a good thing to keep in mind in connection with figuring out how to avoid being attracted to charismatic cult leaders, people like that.
这第一条呢，很重要的就是说，不要是去就好像就是崇拜偶像的方式来修学佛法。好像因为这位法师很吸引人，因为是他，所以你才接近佛法。如果他不在了，你就把佛法放下来了。这样子的依止是不对、不正确的。你要依止佛所说的道理，然后照着这样子去做，然后深深的体验文思修整个这个过程，很深入的能够从佛所说的里面的法得到受益。所以你要依止这个法。然后从实修里面得到正义，能够真正的了义他所说的这个法，能够才这是这样子的做才是正确的。不要像一般在我们也听过一些好像很有名，就是很吸引人的一些宗教师很多的人就是因为他崇拜他而去信仰他所说的里面的这些他叫你怎么做你就怎么做，是因为他，而不是你没有经过自己整个这个思虑过程对这个法真正能够有一个深入的了解，这样子的做你会受伤，而不是佛教我们不要这样子做。
As you probably know, it's fairly common in religious organizations for some person to become the leader of the organization who seems to attract followers for reasons that have more to do with his or her personality and the way that they project themselves and so on. You know, their sort of charisma, the show business aspect of it, you know. That happens. That happens pretty often, and people do get attracted to that. Now, the Buddha is telling you that's not what should be attracting you. You should not be. That's relying on the person. You know. Oh, this, what a wonderful person. You know, I'll do whatever this person says. No, that's not Buddhistic. Okay. Buddhism is look at the teachings themselves, try to put them into practice in your life, and see how it goes, see how it works.
What?
You said that already.
Sorry.
This is Uber translation. Wow. It's not just an echo. Sometimes she thinks of her own things. Okay, my goodness. All right. Thank you so much for doing this for me, Echo. I mean it. All right. Well, anyway. Okay. So don't rely on cult leaders. And, you know, we all know that. But it happens. You know, you see it in the paper all the time. I mean, think about you guys remember the Jonestown situation that was down in thousands of people drank cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. They drank poisoned Kool-Aid because this guy Jim Jones, who was one of these charismatic kind of guys, told them to. And they did it. They all did it. I mean, it was about 30 years ago this happened, but shocking, shocking, you know. The Buddha would not, no, none of that. Thank you. Don't do that. Now, I can't tell you that there isn't somebody out there in the world maybe who's pretending to be a Buddhist master who might actually do the same sort of thing. I mean, that's possible because, you know, I mean, just because somebody decides to say they're a Buddhist master, I mean, anybody can say it, right? You know, and so you can't, you know, one, another reason not to rely on the person, but rely on the Dharma. You want to, we'll talk about that in a second, about how can you tell whether a master is authentic or not. It's an important question. And it's difficult for beginners because beginners don't really know very much yet. And so it's fairly easy for them to get misled in certain ways.
所以再想强调一下，就是真的是现在当今很多人崇拜，就是看到这位宗教领袖很吸引人，他讲的话非常非常的吸引他，就是他说什么就照着怎么去做，而从自己没有透过一种很深入的思考练习，就这样子盲目的去。 盲师，就是照着他叫你怎么做你就怎么做，这种是有一种好像盲目的跟从这位所谓的这个宗教的领袖，在30年前曾经发生的一个事情，就是有一位也是非常吸引的人的一个宗教领袖叫做 Jim Jones， 他吸引了一大堆的人，然后他结果就说服这些人呢一起吃毒药，然后全部集体自杀。所以像这样子的，就是一种例子，让这些人呢，他就是盲目的吸引这个被这个 Jim Jones 吸引住了，他说什么就照着这样子盲目的去做，导致这样子的一个结果。所以佛在2000多年就告诉我们，不可以依人，而必须要依法。
Okay, now it's also important. This is tricky stuff because it's also a mistake to reject a teaching simply because the teacher you hear it from has less than a perfect character. You know, I mean, you know, teachers who are as you know, obviously advanced and so on as the Buddha clearly was, or as Shifu was, in my opinion, certainly affected me that way. You know, there not every teacher, even though the teacher is a legitimate teacher, they're not always that pure looking in their behavior. So you might be turned off by them if you notice certain things about them. Don't necessarily reject their teachings absolutely because of that. You know, the teachings are one thing and the person is another thing. Okay? It's best if they're both perfect, but how often do you have perfection in life? You know, it's not that common, right?
反过来说，如果你的老师，他不要因为他你对他个人的这个的生活行为或是个人的这些所作所为不满意，而对他所说出来的真正的佛法的道义而去不遵从他所说的正义。去做，这个也是不正确的。
Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book, The Heart of the Buddha's Teaching, which is a great book, by the way, I recommend it to anybody. I know, you know, he's a great teacher and a great writer, and he and Shifu both respected each other quite a bit. He wrote the introductions to some of Shifu's books. So I know that, you know, they're on the same wavelength. But he tells a story in his book about when he was a kid in Vietnam going to school, they had a teacher who would tell them every day, it's a terrible thing to smoke cigarettes. You really have to be careful. Try very hard not to become addicted to cigarettes. But you might guess what the next thing is. This teacher smoked cigarettes constantly, right? You know, he smoked all the time. And yet he was the one who would tell them, oh, don't smoke. You know, so now what should the students do in this circumstance? Of course, it's kind of funny when you hear it and you think, what a hypocrite this guy is. That's what you might think. What a hypocrite, right? He's a hypocrite. But maybe you should think, well, if anybody knows whether smoking's bad for you, it's this guy, because he smokes all the time, right? It's another way to look at it, right?
举个例子，一行禅师他曾经在他写的书里面提到一个他自己个人的经验，就是他小的时候有一位老师常常劝他的学生说，这个抽烟是对你是对自己对身体非常的不好，怎样不好怎样不好。可是这个老师呢，是自己本人他是抽烟的，是就他说这个抽烟不好，叫人家不要抽烟，而自己每天都在抽烟。所以呢，这个例子呢，一行禅师是说。是你可以有的人可以说，哦，你自己都抽烟，这怎么是等于是说你自己都做不到，还叫别人去做自己都不做一个是好好的这个模范哈，然后自己抽烟。可是你反过来想，就是说他是一个抽烟的人，所以他很清楚的知道抽烟有什么不好的，什么不好的，所以他说这话呢，应该是很值得听的。所以呢，你如果这样子想的话，你就会照，你就会照他所说的这个不要抽烟去照着这样做，你就不会因为他本人的行为是跟他所说的话是相反的，而不去照着他所说的话对你有好处而不去照着做，这是一个很好的例子。
So obviously it would be a mistake for the students in this circumstance to say to themselves, well, he says we shouldn't smoke. That would be his dharma.Right? The Dharma is, his little Dharma is, don't smoke. That's what he wants you to do. But then you look at him, at his person, and he smokes. Now the mistake is to think that, well, the Dharma must be wrong and what the person is doing must be right, so we're going to smoke too. Right? You know, that would be kind of crazy, but that's the same idea applies when you're looking at a master. If the master has a possible teacher, if their understanding of the basic Dharma is good, and that's what they convey when they talk to people and so on, well then, if they still have some character flaws, as long as they're not terrible character flaws, don't hold that against them. You know, I mean, you know, it's so, all try to learn to separate the Dharma from the person who's presenting it, okay?
这个例子呢，在比如说他讲说不要抽烟，这可以说是他所说的法，这个法就是不要抽烟，因为抽烟对你怎样怎样不好。可是他这个本人呢，他这个人呢，他自己在抽烟的。所以说你如果是依人呢不依法的话呢，那你就去照样他抽烟了，因为这个人是抽烟的咯，对不对？那所以所谓第一条的是依法不依人，就是说他说的法是好的，所谓不抽烟对你有什么好处啊，抽了烟以后对你有什么不好处，你如果照着这样子依的法啊去照着做的话啊，你就会得到受益。所以这个例子就是告诉你说，今天比如说你去听一位老师说的这个道理，其实他这个讲的，他说的道理呢是正确的，是对你有好处的，你就要照着去做。不管这个老师他自己本人对这个道理做得到什么程度，或者有没有做，这个你不要去，你要把它分开来啊。只要这个道理对你是有受益，对你有好处，你实际的去照着做，你真的能够受益的，你就要照着去做。
You might wonder how does this happen? How does a person have an intellectual understanding that something is bad for them, but they do it anyway? You see this all the time, right? A lot of people know they should be losing weight, but they don't seem to be able to lose weight, right? A lot, you know, this is out there. It's something that we all go through. Well, the Buddhist explanation for this is that, you know, the desire to eat is stronger than the intellectual understanding that it's a bad thing to overeat or smoke or whatever, right? Joko Beck, who was the head of the Zen Center in San Diego for a long time, had a little phrase in one of her books that always stuck with me. It was, well, you can teach people the Dharma, but sometimes it's like telling an alcoholic to stop drinking, right? A person can understand the Dharma and can know, yeah, this would be a good way to live, but then you discover they can't really do it. You know, when push comes to shove in their lives, the power of the desire, the power of the vexation, what it means is their vexations, as we call them here, are stronger than their desire and their understanding to not, you know, to not follow the vexation. The vexation wins every time. Any kind of addictive activity, that's what's going on. The alcoholic, you can sit down with a person who's an alcoholic and you can say, you know drinking's bad for you, don't you? And they say, oh yeah, I know. It's really messed up my whole life. Say, okay, well, great. I'm glad to see that we now understand that drinking is bad for you. And then the guy says, yeah, fine. And he walks out the door, and the first bar that he walks by, he goes right in and starts drinking. Right? That's how addiction operates. We all know it, right? The Buddhist explanation for that is that that's a case where the vexation of desire for that alcohol is just so strong that all the other psychic forces the person might have, the desire to reject it, the desire to keep yourself healthy and all of that, it's just overwhelmed by the power of the vexation, okay? So what we're really doing in Buddhism in general is trying to cut down on the power of these vexations that mess up our lives. I mean, one thing, one of Shifu's statements, I have a few statements that Shifu made to me have stuck with me for my whole life. And one of them was, we were talking about something, he says, look, all we're trying to do is get rid of vexations. Let's get rid of these bad habits that put us into these, you know, terrible cycles in our lives, right? Well, addiction is a very, very bad habit. That's what it just means. It's an incredible, extremely, extremely strong vexation, and it'll take a heck of a lot of work to overcome it. Is what it really boils down to.
就刚刚举的这个例子，这位老师他劝人不要抽烟，而自己啊、又是一位抽烟的人，怎么解释？由佛法的方由佛法来解释是说。他虽然在这个虽然他了解道理，就是说抽烟对对人不好，对人的身体不好啊、可是他因为他对这个烟瘾，他这个想要抽烟的欲望超过他这个就是在理智上对这个抽烟不好的这个了解的层面，也就是说大过于他真正的决定不抽烟啊，所以他这个欲望是非常的强烈的，就这个烟瘾是非常强烈。那烟瘾与佛法来解释，就是一种烦恼的这种力量，这欲望造成的这种烦恼的这个业力非常的重，所以他虽然他懂这个抽烟是对自己不好，可是他还是没有办法做到说不抽烟。这个在有一位在有位很有名的这个禅师叫做 Joko Beck， 他是在 San Diego 那边一个这个 Zen Center 里面的一个他是那边主持人，他就讲说，他说你教人你教教一位这个在有酗酒有酒瘾的人去戒酒，这个是他一下子是做不到的。所以你说哎呀喝酒对你又怎样怎样不好不好不好，对不对？他在这个在这个怎么讲，就是说这个道理上他是很清楚，可是讲完以后他一出门看到酒吧他马上就会去再去喝酒。这个就是说每一个人他的这个烦恼的业力不同，所以他虽然在他的道理上了解，可是在他的这个真正的要做到不这么做，那还是有一段距离的。
Okay, so how do we go about judging whether a master is an authentic master or not? Shifu has a little, in this book, Zen Wisdom, there's a very short little chapter in which Shifu talks about that question. The first thing he says is the most important thing is the actual dharma that the teacher presents. Rely on the dharma, not on the person, right? That's what Shifu's sort of saying there. What is this guy's dharma, right? What does he say? Now this is where it can get tricky for beginners, because if they don't understand the dharma well enough themselves, it's hard to judge whether somebody else, you know, is expressing it well. But there's a sort of, you know, you need to do a little work on this to really master these various concepts. But now, Shifu's short description of what to look for in terms of a master's understanding of the Dharma in this article is: the first thing is that the person should understand the concept of causes and conditions. That's also known as conditioned arising. Now, we don't have time to actually go into detail to talk about these various teachings. But I want you to know that one of the most important teachings is this idea about conditioned arising. That's, you know, part of it is the 12-linked chain of conditioned arising, the 12 nidanas that are taught. It's basically dealing with the basic question of why are things the way they are? Why is this here? And why is that not here?
接下来要讲的就是说，我们怎么能够认定说这位老师是真的是对这个佛法是真是好的一位老师，或是正法的老师。 第一个就是他所说的法呢，要跟佛所说的这个因缘法要契合。那因缘法里面包括就是十二因缘这些这里面的道理。
Okay, in this book, Orthodox Chinese Buddhism, there's a question answer section in here where one of the questions is, what is the ultimate truth of Buddhism? And Shifu says, conditioned arising. Okay? That is one of the teachings that, that can lead you to an understanding of pretty much the whole Dharma if you follow through on it. Now, what he says in this, again, is the person, does he understand conditioned arising? If he does, then his actions will be based on a foundation of emptiness. Shunyata, you've all heard that term too. Shunyata, emptiness. It's another one of the big, major ideas, right? Why is that? Well, because conditioned arising is all about the fact that everything's impermanent. Things exist because causes and conditions are appropriate for them to exist at that time. Causes and conditions are always fluctuating, though. They're changing, which means that things are going to be changing. Everything changes. Impermanence, right? First, very important teaching, the teaching of impermanence. Now, because everything is changing all the time, you cannot find anywhere you look, you will never find a thing that is not subject to causes and conditions. Everything is changing. So if you look inside yourself for an eternal soul that never changes, you're not going to find one. That's what he's saying. If you try to find a little piece of something or other that is the watchness of my watch, right, you won't find it. There's no essence like that. Things like that just aren't really part of reality. That's one of the most basic teachings of Buddhism. Now, once you understand that, you won't become attached to what you do, to what they do. So Shifu is real simple. He says, well, if they understand causes and conditions, they'll understand emptiness, this idea that there's nothing, you know, substantial that doesn't change. They get that, right? Once they understand that, they can start working on getting rid of their attachments, right? Attaching to things emotionally. That's vexation, right? They're getting rid of their vexations, right? Because they understand causes and conditions. They understand the nature of emptiness. Why would you get excited about winning the lottery? Why would you be miserable about somebody stealing your car, if you understand the concept of emptiness on a deep level? You won't, you know, because you're not attached to those things.
一位真正的好的法师，或者是一位佛法的这个法师或者是老师，他除了这个师父在正信的佛教里面讲说，他除了他讲的教义要跟因果相应外，而且在行为上也要与空的这个空的道理相应。那所谓的空呢，就是说一切这个一切的这个世间法呢，都是暂时存在，而不是永久存在的。也就是这个无常的道理，也就是当我们了解到这个无常的话，我们对一切的事物都不会有执着心，因为不执着，所以我们就不会起烦恼。那人，我们一般人会起烦恼，是因为没有对这个空有深入的了解，认为这一切都是实时的存在的。这样子的话，当事情变化的时候呢，他会有一种身心上的一些负面的这个情绪，会造成自己的烦恼。所以说，当我们能够深入的了解空的道理呢，对一切不执着。那当你如果得了一个这个中了乐透奖以后呢，你也不会很过分的欢喜，是因为你知道这一切都是暂时存在的。而相对的，当你 在很失落的时候，或者是你的这个车子被人家偷了，或者是被人家这个毁灭了，或是就是毁坏了，你也不会起负面的情绪。你因为你了解到空的道理，这一切都是暂时发生的，你不会因为这个暂时的现象而起情绪上的一些负面的这个烦恼。所以呢，师父在这个正信佛教里面讲，就是说当你听一位法师讲话讲佛法的时候，你要知道他讲的道理要跟因果相应，同时他的行为要跟空有相应，这样子这个法师或者这一位老师就是一个好的老师。
OK there are two other teachings that that you could look at as being as important as conditioned arising. Sometimes I've even heard Shifu say this, that the essence of Buddhism is the three seals of the Dharma, the teaching that everything is impermanent, everything is characterized by no self, that is to say, there's no permanent self, nothing out there that doesn't change, which is the same thing as saying there's nothing out there that isn't subject to causes and conditions, because that's where all the change comes from, is causes and conditions, right? And that the third seal is that if you don't understand those two things, if you live your life without understanding and really living in the spirit of the impermanence of things and the fact that things are constantly changing, occur by causes and conditions, and that there's nothing solid and unchanging that you can cling to, if you live your life without understanding those things, you're going to have suffering, dukkha. This is where it connects into the Four Noble Truths, right? Dukkha, suffering. You will have that if you don't understand and live your life according to the three seals of the Dharma. If you do understand, then you will have nirvana, right? Suffering will go away, okay? You'll be like Avalokitesvara in the Heart Sutra. You perceive that all five skandhas are empty. Therefore, you transcend all suffering, okay? Emptiness is really just a combination of impermanence and no self. When you say all five skandhas are empty, what you're saying is every experience that you have is characterized by impermanence and this idea of no self, the fact that it's changing, it's changing because it's subject to causes and conditions. Live your life in that spirit. You won't have the suffering that arises for ordinary people.
另外一个非常重要的佛所说的法意是叫做三法印。三法印呢，第一个是无常，无常也就是说没有一样世间的东西是永久存在的，都是暂时存在，因为因缘和合它才会有，因缘不合的时候它就不存在，所以因为没有这所谓的这个永久存在的现象，所以叫做无常。那第二个就是无我，无我的意思是空，也就是说当就是跟这个无常是息息相关的，因为我们了解到一切事情一切现象一切现象呢都是暂时发生的，而我们自己本身这个我呢也是暂时的存在的也是因为因缘和合，而我这个身体有因缘变了以后我就没有这样子的一个身体，也就是说我们今天这个人的这个我呢也是一个暂时的现象。那第三个法印是说，当我们对前面这个两个法印呢，所谓的无常和无我这两个道理呢，不能够真正体验，而真正的了悟，而真正的是有真正的这个照着这样子的去观看一切的法的话呢，我们就会我们就是苦，我们就会会起烦恼，而起执着种种的各种苦就会有了。也这个苦也就是跟这个四圣地里面讲的第一个圣地这个苦地是息息相关的。那如果说我们能够真的照着这个佛所说的这个三法印去看 去真的是体验，去真的照着这样做，对这个世间的一切的法这样子照着这操作的话呢，我们就等于是在涅槃中。我们就像这个心经里面讲的，观自在菩萨呢，行深般若波罗蜜多时呢，他照见五蕴皆空，度一切苦厄。那这个五蕴呢，也是一种所谓的五蕴，就是暂时存在的，因为能够他真正照见这个五蕴是暂时存在，所以他能够度一切苦厄。
Okay, now the last thing that Shifu says here is he says the last thing to really look for is this person attached in his actions? Is he attached? That's what the first thing. But then the second thing is, are his actions undergirded by a sense of responsibility? That's what Shifu says. This means basically, does the person understand that actions have consequences? Right? This is the idea of causes and consequences, which is essentially the law of karma, right, in Buddhism. It's, does this person pay attention to the karmic effects that his actions might have, right? If he doesn't, well, that's a sign that he's not a very good master, right? I mean, on some level or other, there's a problem if he is constantly behaving in ways that, you know, create bad karma and hurt other people and so on.
第三个师父提到就是怎么样去看能够怎么样能够定义是一位真正的好的老师呢？第三个就是说要看他对这个他的行为上，还有他对这个因果有没有照着这个因果能够对这个他所做出的行为呢他有没有对非常深入的了解他这个因果的道理，就他做什么样事情会造什么样的结果，然后因为是这样子，他对他所做的行为呢非常的负责任，所以这一方面你要观看他是不是对这个因果他所做出的这些行为他很清楚啊，做什么事情会得到什么样的结果，不好的事情不好的因他不去造那好的因他去尽量的培养还有就是说他对于各种这个世间的事情呢这个人事他是不是有一种执着心是因为执着心以基础的有没有是这样子的一个现象，那如果是有的话他就是不是一位很好的老师。
Okay, that's a lot. I'm just giving you a very brief view of the basic dharma. That's what I want you to do. So I want you to know what you should be trying to learn. So you can, you know, once you really have this simple, it sounds so simple. Shifu just says, you know, does he understand causes and conditions? If he does, well, then he won't be attached. That's vexations, right? And now does he pay attention to the consequences of his actions and so on? That's the law of karma, right? You know, causes and consequence. If, you know, those are the things you should be asking yourself about, you know, when you're trying to judge a master. Now, with this last one about the karma, if he's got minor flaws that's we've talked about this. Don't worry about minor flaws in character. Nobody's perfect. But if they're big flaws, you know, really big ones, well, then you should worry about it a little bit. So the big teachings are, you know, does he understand causes and conditions? Does he understand the three seals of the Dharma, this idea of impermanence and no self, which really is also means emptiness? And the other one is the Four Noble Truths. Does he understand the Four Noble Truths, the idea of dukkha, you know, the dukkha nature of our experience, why things are don't turn out the way we want them to. You know, those three are all interconnected. If you can get all those things down, you really do understand the Buddhism pretty well.
所以做一个总结，就是说一位真正的好的老师，他一定是对这个因缘法非常的深入，而且很了解，而且对三法印还有四圣地里面的苦地有非常深入的这个了解，能够就是他所说的法呢，对这三项 都有包括住。那如果这个人他个人的行为也许不是非常的完美，那可是他只要是说他说的道理说的法呢，能够跟因缘法跟三法印还有四圣谛都有相应的话，你就可以把他当成是一位很好的老师，你就可以跟他学习。
Okay, a lot to say on rely on the Dharma, not the person. That's because the Dharma is pretty big. But anyway, let's move on now to number two. Rely on absolute truth, not relative truth. This one we need to do this one, we need to explain a few other things, too.
第二个依止是叫做依了义不依不了义。
Okay, Buddhism, talks in terms of different levels of truth. You'll notice this when you start reading sutras. You'll see that this is something that they do. And especially in the Mahayana, there's a distinction between absolute truth and ordinary truth, or ordinary reality, absolute reality. Okay? Now, the relative truth, or the truth of ordinary reality, is the truth that we experience as we go through the world, the ordinary world, okay? Absolute truth is the truth that Buddhas experience, or extremely advanced practitioners experience. It is the ultimate truth of Buddhism, and part of what we're doing in our practice is trying to get to the point where we can actually access that level of truth in some way or other.
佛法里面讲这个真理呢，有各种不同的等级的，但一般来讲分成两个，一个是世间法，一个是超世间法。
Okay, now it is very difficult to talk about absolute reality. In fact, it's impossible. That's what you hear all the time. And it's true. Because one of the aspects of this absolute truth that Buddhism talks about is that it doesn't contain any dualisms. That's a good way to think about anything, any way of thinking or acting or whatever that is based on some kind of dualistic concept is from the realm of ordinary reality. It's not absolute reality. Now, one thing that this means is that it's impossible to talk about it, because what are we doing when we talk about things? We're using language, we're using logic, we're using these various tools, all of which were developed to help us survive in ordinary reality. That's what they're for, right? Language, logic, these things, they're all dualistic. Every time you say, well, this is a black car, well, that means it's not a white car. And, you know, our minds automatically hook into this sort of dualistic aspect of any statement that we make. So it's something, the statements that we make, you know, the thing, they're like the finger pointing at the moon, right? You know that analogy, right? All the Dharma, all the teachings, really, are fingers. They're all fingers, and they're pointing at something up there, right? That the thing they're pointing at is called the moon, but that's ultimate reality. Now, all you ever see, though, are the fingers, okay? You want to learn to stop looking at the finger and look at the moon, okay?
超世间法是无法用语言来解释的，因为当我们用语言来解释的时候，已经就落在这个二元法。因为当我们说这个车子是白色的车子，那相对下就是因为白色是有跟这个黑色来比较，说这个是白色，那个是黑色，所以不管是用，反正是用语言来解释的话呢，就已经是落在的这个主观客观的这个二元法下。所以说超世间法呢是 没有办法用语言逻辑来解释的。就像说用手我们所有是说的佛法都是这个所谓的二元法，比如说用手指月，那这个手指的这个指，这个手指的这个手指呢，就像好像是我们世间的所说的这些佛法呢，真正的你要看的这是月亮。可是问题是他教你怎么看的这些方法呢，就是你所看到的就是这个手指啊，指着这个月的这个手指。所以说超世间法呢是没有办法真的用语言来解释的。
Okay, now this truth is really, this one is a little dicey in my view, and the view of some of the other commentators that I've been reading. Don't take this reliance to say you rely on the absolute truth, not on the relative truth. That only apply that when there's a real distinction between the two, when you have to choose one or the other. Don't think that this means that relative truth is not important and should be ignored, okay? Most of the source Buddhist teachings, the Four Noble Truths, the Three Seals of the Dharma, you know, the causes and conditions, those are really talking about ordinary reality. You know, when the Buddha says in the Four Noble Truths, all human existence is touched by unsatisfactoriness, right? Everything you experience in ordinary reality, that's what he's talking about. In ordinary reality, you're going to go through your life, you're going to try to get this, try to get that, try to get something else. Even if you get them, they will not give you the satisfaction that you're really looking for. That's what the Buddha is saying in the First Noble Truth. It's all characterized by dukkha, the Sanskrit dukkha, which means a sort of unsatisfactoriness. Some of it is really just terribly horrible, like, you know, the things that we don't like. You're going to get old. You're going to get sick. Eventually, you will die. How does that make you feel? okay? Now, but aren't those statements dualistic in a sense? There's a dualism between life and death, right? And the Buddha is talking to us about that dualism when he talks about the Four Noble Truths. So should we think that anything that has anything to do with relative reality shouldn't be paid attention to? No, that's absolutely not the idea. The teachings about ordinary reality, about how to live in this world right here that you're living in, which is an ordinary reality world, those teachings are designed to help us get to the point where we can transcend all that suffering that's in this world. But we have to do it by working through this world with what's right here, right? And so a lot of the teachings are about ordinary reality. And that doesn't mean that they are irrelevant teachings and should not be paid attention to. Okay? If you think that, you're falling into the trap of nihilism. That's what Buddhists call it, nihilism. You say, well, if, you know, life and death aren't really different, you know, because there's no dualisms in absolute reality, it doesn't matter what I do in the world. I can do whatever I want to do. I can be a murderer, be a thief. Why, it doesn't matter. There's no dualisms. That's not a proper understanding of the Dharma. Because the Buddha said, no, there is a difference. You're in ordinary reality. And if you're a murderer, you're going to have a much worse life than you will have if you're not. Right? And that's true. Okay? So don't think that the fact that we have this idea of absolute reality negates or in some way makes relative reality unimportant. That's not accurate.
第二个是一了义，不一不了义。这一项呢是当你要选择，就是两样，一个是了义和不了义的话，你要选了义而不选不了义。 这一项并不是说不了义，也是说也就是说世间法不重要，世间法你就不需要去注意它，这其实是相反的。世间法呢，因为我们是活在世间的，我们的这个所谓的真理呢是世间的真理，所以我们对世间的真理要非常的清楚，而且要非常的这个要遵从它。比如说你今天杀了人，你的生活杀了人以后就是苦，你就没有办法这个像你还没有杀人之前那样子很自在的生活。所以说对世间的这些所谓的真理，所谓世间法呢，我们不要因为这一项说的是要医疗义不医不了义，你就去不管他了，说反正这是不了义的，所以我就不需要去注意他，那我就随便，我就生活就我随性要怎么做就怎么做你这样子的话，你就是完全对这一项有错误的认识。所以今天因为我们是活在世间的凡夫，我们活在世间的这个所以我们对世间的这些一切的世间法都非常的都必须要遵从。而且佛法里面讲的这些所谓的因缘法，这些三法印，还有刚刚讲的这个所谓的这是圣地，就是针对于世间的这些真理来说的，要怎么样借过这个经由这个对超越了这个我们就所谓的超越，就是说对我们这世间的这些世间法之后，完完全全的对它的真意有特别的了解了以后呢我们就会离苦而得乐。那并不表示说对这个世间法完全就去忽视它不理它这样子的做法就是错的因为世间法告诉我们说，我们人就会经过这个所谓的生老病死的这整个过程我们就会对这是个世间法的一个这个法律这个也是因缘会我们的人生就会这样子这个过程是这个样子的。那如果你去忽略了它，不去对它有这个注意它的话呢，那你的生活就会更苦你对这一项所谓的医疗义不医不了义呢，就会有错误的了解，而错误的这个发生出错误的这个行为。
All right, sometimes the Mahayana sutras actually seem to contradict the sutras of source Buddhism. This can cause problems. Many of you, I think, have already noticed this. In the Heart Sutra, which is a Mahayana sutra, right, one of the big and most important of the Mahayana sutras, and it's all about the concept of emptiness. In the Heart Sutra, they talk about Avalokiteshvara transcends all suffering, and then they go into this long litany where they say there is no suffering, there is no cause of suffering, there is no cessation of suffering, there is no path. Well, what does that mean about the Four Noble Truths, right? You know, if people who are beginning to study Buddhism, they learn about the Four Noble Truths, maybe, right? That's how they start. Oh, okay, there's suffering, there's cause of suffering, there's cessation of suffering, then there's a path that leads to the cessation of suffering. Okay, great. Then somebody, if they're in a Mahayana school, gives them the Heart Sutra to read, and they go, wait a minute. I just did all this work that told me there is this, there is this, there is this, and now they're telling me it's not there. You know, there is no suffering. Okay, so how do you reconcile this? Well, you reconcile it through this teaching that we've been talking about, which is actually the teaching of two truths. There are different levels, and the Heart Sutra talks about a different level than the Four Noble Truths do, right? So for a fully realized person, a really high level bodhisattva or a Buddha, in a sense it's true to say there is no suffering because that person has transcended the suffering. That's what it means, right? It doesn't mean that for you and me walking around in the ordinary world having to deal with all our problems, there's no suffering. There is suffering for us because, you know, we're not that advanced, right? We're just not that high level.
大圣的佛法，大圣的佛法呢，有的时候你看的不同的经典呢，
他说的道理会正好这个好像有点冲突，有点出入。 比如说刚刚我们所谓讲的这些所谓的四圣谛苦集灭道那怎么样去离苦要练习这个八正道有各种很有不同有种非常规律的这种步骤让你怎么样能够离苦得乐。那从心经的角度来看呢，它里面讲是无苦集灭道什么都无，然后没有苦，就好像是有一种出入的怎么解释它呢？也就是说，这是一种用它叫做二元法，也就是说是这个心经里面所讲的，是因为这些大菩萨他已经超越了。都已经这个解脱，这个完全解脱了，所以从他的角度来看就什么都没有，因为什么都没有，他什么都不执着，所以他就离苦得乐。那对我们这些凡夫呢，因为我们看的什么都有，我们都是这个世间法来看什么，所以呢，是我们所看到的，我们所修行的方法呢我们所了悟的呢，就是要有步骤的，要因为就是要透过这个了解这四圣谛整个这个过程，然后修这个八正道然后我们才会了悟到一切都是空，才会把真正的把自己的执着放下，那个时候呢一切都空掉了。所以不要有所以不要对这个大乘法有错误的认知。
Okay, so what I'm, the second reliance here, rely on the absolute and not on the relative. Well, okay, if it's a choice, direct choice between the two, and you're in the proper circumstances, rely on the absolute rather than the relative. You don't ignore the relative. Don't ever think that's what you do. It's not. Relative truth is truth when,Now, the absolute, you're going to hear Zen masters talk about how everything in the world is everything is interconnected. The interconnectedness of all existence is one of the teachings of the Mahayana, certainly, okay? Complete interconnectedness. Why do we believe in that? I mean, well, we do because of causes and conditions and emptiness. Everything is changing all the time.Anything that seems to be solid and separate right now, is not going to remain solid and separate forever. Everything is going to change. And so you, Echo, and I are different people. That's an ordinary reality statement, but it's true. It's true in ordinary reality. Echo and I are different people, right? But at some point, Echo and I, we'll both die, our molecules will, go out into the big flux of the universe, and then maybe 500 years from now, some person will be born which has some Echo qualities and some of my qualities, right? Right? In a sense, we're not separate, right? Everything is, in fact, interconnected, okay? But...when you're driving your car and you come to a red light, stop. Don't say, oh, red, green, who cares? It's all interconnected. Don't say that, all right? Stop your car when you come to a red light. All right. But anyway, but don't get too, when you're sitting around worrying about life and death at home and you're miserable and you're driving yourself crazy, then remind yourself, everything's interconnected.It's not really necessary that you feel miserable about death.
这个了义跟不了义呢，这个了义这个大圣的讲法就是说一切都是息息相关息息相连的所以今天在世间法来解释你我我还有 Echo 还有你们其实我们是不一样的，在世间法来解释我是我， Echo 是 Echo， 然后你是你，可是几年以后我们死掉了，我 Echo 死掉了，那在几百年以后呢，也许有一些这个小小层面会这个所谓的这个原子 会又生出来另外一个会有一点里面另外一个众生生出来以后有一点成分就是有 echo 的成分在里面。这也就是说从世间法来解释的话一切都是有分开来的，可是呢在这个初世间的解释呢我们是息息相连的不分的。所以大家在看到这一项的时候要非常的清楚，对于世间法还是要遵从的，不是说你开车看到红灯以后反正这都是息息相连的嘛所以红灯也不管了就照样去开过去，这样子这样做就不对了。
OK alright those two are the big ones. I think we're going to get through this whole thing because the 3 and 4 go a little more quickly. All right, so, but remember, you know, it's called the teaching of the two truths is number two. That's what you have to keep in mind. When you notice a contradiction between one aspect of a sutra and another aspect of another sutra, one thing to do is ask yourself, well, what perspective are they coming from? Is this meant to be a description of absolute reality, or is it meant to be a description of ordinary reality? That, you know, if you can sort that out, you may be able to understand that there isn't a real contradiction. It seems like there is one, but it's not really a contradiction.
再强调一下，当你在阅读这个大圣经典的时候，不同的经典，你要知道它从什么样的角度来解释，是不是从这个最圣地的这个初世间的法的这个角度来解释，或者是说以世间法的角度来解释，这你要很清楚，不然的话你会感觉到就是读了好像有冲突。其实是没有冲突的，你要很清楚的知道它是从哪个方向哪个角度来解释。
OK, the third reliance, rely on the meaning, not the words. OK, this is a very important one, but it's not that complex. Buddhism, generally speaking, is not a literalistic religion. You know how some religions have some text that is their sacred text and it's like every word was actually spoken by God and so you can't interpret it at all. You know, that's sort of how they approach it. Buddhism is not like that. In Buddhism, you do have to interpret the statements to try to get back to the real meaning that the Buddha was driving at.
第三个和第四个其实是相关的，而且我们会很快的解释。第三个是依义不依语，也就是说佛所说的法呢，你要了解它里面的意义，不要照着字面不去经过你的了解就是照着字面去，就是也依照它的字面的解释，而不经过他的这个深思，你自己的深思里面的意义去追从。
Yes.
Just a quick question. I don't know if these four reliances are supposed to be incremental, building on one another. But so I was just curious about the order. Do you think that you'd have to deal with meanings and words before you could talk about truth, whether it's absolute or relative?
Right. Well, my understanding is that it's not meant to be incremental in that way. And in fact, look, as I think I may have mentioned, if you get on the internet and look at, you know, and pull up the four relevances, the four reliances, you'll get different orders. I mean, they come in different orders depending on who's talking about it. Which is better? I don't know. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Sorry.
Harry 的问题是说，这个四一指它这个次序是不是定成是这样子的？就第一个是依法不依人，就整个这个次序是应该是不是有一些原因？那 Bill 的解释说不是的，因为你去找别的这个资料的话，它的那个整个次序不像我今天写出了这个样子。
Okay, so this is important. I mean, it's always also remember, the Buddha didn't speak English. Correct? correct, I think. The English language is only about 1,000 years old. It's really not much older than that. And Buddhism is 2,500 years old. So Buddha was not speaking English. So there's a translation going on. Buddha didn't speak Chinese either. Okay, there's translation going on. And any of you who have ever done translation work, like Echo, you know that it's really never possible to do a precise and completely accurate translation from one language to another, because the words always have different connotations and there are different sort of ways things work. And to try to get it to fit exactly, it's basically impossible. You can't do it. It's not that the translators aren't doing a good job. It's just that that's the nature of translation. It is imperfect.
还要讲的就是说，佛当初说法的时候，他不是讲英文的，他不是用英文来讲法的，同时也不是用中文讲的，所以都是今天我们听到的法都是经过这个翻译过来的哈。所以当你不管你是这个翻译师是多好多好，他绝对没有办法把它翻成是真正的就完全像佛所说的一模一样的那种意思或是这个字眼。所以说很重要的就是当你研读佛法的时候呢，你不可以依着那个字面的上面去照它的字面的意义，而是必须要经过它的深入的这个了解它里面内容所说的这些深意是什么。
All right, there are some English words, I know the English, that are particularly troublesome when you first start trying to learn. Dukkha, you know, which is, I tend to try to use the Sanskrit because then we can avoid to some extent having to explain why what they call suffering in the English, most of the English translations isn't really exactly right, and there are some, and it is misleading in some ways. Also, emptiness, you know, the word emptiness, kind of misleading in certain ways. It makes people think that Buddhism is saying that there's nothing exists at all, which is not what Buddhism is really saying. That's an exaggeration. But the only way you can really get past all this is to work hard, to go over the teachings again and again, and when you come to these words, try to understand what they're really doing. Now, I didn't bring it with me, but I recommend a book. When I first got going on this, at a certain point I realized I'd like to have a dictionary. And there's a fairly good one. It's called the Shambhala Dictionary of Buddhism and Zen. It's by the Shambhala Publishing people. It's a dictionary of Buddhism and Zen in English language, you know, going from the originals to English, right? You know, and I've found it very useful sometimes when I'm dealing with some Buddhist term. Sometimes I say, I don't really know what this means, but to go to that dictionary and just read through the explanation in the dictionary saves me a lot of time. It's really a good idea. So I would recommend that you try to buy that if you're serious about this. And, you know, you've got to always remember the original meaning is what's important, not the language, you know, not whatever the words are that the language it's translated into might be implying, because that's not accurate, right? So try to get back to the original. I would say get yourself a dictionary. It'll help a lot.
举个例子，佛法里面提到的这个苦，它这个梵文它叫 dukkha， 那英文解释叫做 suffering， 那中文叫做苦。这个其实这个苦这个字呢，这个三种不同的这种字哈，解释同样的一个现象。所以说可是因为语言的关系呢，听到的人对它有另外一层的一种这个怎么解释。再说一个用空这个字来说英文叫 emptiness。那他的意思是说并不是空空的什么都没有如果你是照着这样子解释的话，你就对这个字对这个法所谓的空的道理就有错误的认识。所以呢，就是我劝大家就是说一定要很努力的去真正的去了解 这个它里面的意义到底含义是什么，而且要真正的是一遍一遍的去揣摩它，直到有一天你真的去了解它里面的意义，而不要就是照这个字面去解释啊，做这个很肤浅的了解。那我很建议大家就去买一个这个字典哈，这个字典是英文的字典，它这个香巴拉它所出版的出版社叫香巴拉，它把这个梵文解成英文啊，它把这个梵文这个原来的这个意义用英文来解释出来，因为对我个人很受益，有的时候我读的时候呢，我很想要知道它这个原来就是梵文这个佛当时说的那个梵文是什么，那它梵文的这个字眼的意义是什么。所以就是提醒大家不要在这个字面上啊，就是很肤浅的去了解它的意义，而是要把它的意思这个里面的内容这个精神有更深入的了解。
I don't know of a good Chinese dictionary. I have no Chinese, so maybe there is a Chinese dictionary of Buddhist terms somewhere that would be useful to the Chinese speakers. If it doesn't cost an arm and a leg, I would recommend everybody get one.
我不懂中文，所以我没办法推荐这个一些就是从梵文解释成中文的这种字典哈。可是如果大家去查一下，如果不是很贵的话，不会可以去买一本。
Okay, the fourth reliance is easy. It's really talking about the same thing as the second reliance. The so-called wisdom mind is the mind that is in touch with and comprehends absolute reality. Discriminating mind is the mind we use when we're walking around in ordinary reality, saying, oh, it's a green light, I guess I can go in my car. Oh, it's a red light, I better stop. Okay? So once again, as we said with number two,I think it would be better if you say you should rely on the mind that's appropriate for the circumstance that is being discussed, right? When you're teaching driver's ed, don't tell people about absolute reality and don't confuse people with the idea that red lights are the same as green lights, okay? If you're teaching driver's ed, I mean, why would you do that, all right? But when you're reading the sutras, remember there are two levels of truth.There is this absolute truth that we are trying to learn how to access, but there's also the ordinary world that we're living in right now, and both are important. Absolute truth is not more important than relative truth. Okay? It's hard. It sounds like it would be, but it's not really. Okay? All right, that's it.
最后一个就是医治不医事，这个是跟第二个这个医疗义不医疗义很有息息相关的。治也就是我们所谓的出世间的法，那个事呢就是我们的世间法啊。所以这个也就是我要强调的，就是说世间法和出世间法同等的重要，而不是说出世间法比这个世间法而重要。所以说，当我们在教导别人的时候呢，不能说这以出世间的立场来看，就是红灯跟绿灯是没有差别的。可是你是一个活在这个世间，所以你对这个世间法要非常的清楚。你要教人开车的时候，你要告诉他红灯跟绿灯是不一样的。谢谢大家。